My name is Tim Walbrecht. I'm from Redmond, Washington. And I am here for this week and next week at Holden. And this week I've been doing series on life cycle. Today the theme is midlife, searching for the life that matters. And when I was putting this together, it became
that
quite
role
evident to
continues
me that there
to play
is just so much
that
out
role.
There.
Huh? And more recently, psychology has become
and thoughts that it would take several
part
days
of
to
dialogue for
it all
theology,
out.
Especially for
what I've decided to do for this session. I've set some basic goals.
See the importance of social sciences for theology.
First off, we will not finish this subject at all. So it is my hope that at least I've whetted your appetite to maybe think about it and maybe do your own type of study and dialogue on it. I hope to look at some of the characteristics of midlife, at least what's presented to us by the professionals, and maybe look at some of the developmental tasks that are involved, some of the, I think, humorous tasks, as well as some of the lighter side, some of the more serious side. Maybe come to a definition of midlife from our own perspective. One thing that I've found in looking through all the literature, and I'm not even completed doing that, is that the professionals have a difficult time defining what exactly midlife is. And I want to dialogue on midlife. I want us to discuss how do we see it affecting ourselves and our own lives, and get some of that going. From a personal perspective, I hope to leave here with my own definition of midlife, and then I can figure out if I have entered it or if I'm beyond help or whatever. So anyway, I put two statements up here on front. Midlife, two basic definitions or overview definition that I've run across, and we might come back to this later and kind of discuss this. Seen as the time left to live rather than time since birth, or a point where a person stops growing up and begins to grow old. Okay. I have another definition of midlife that I would like to share with you. It's the idea of midlife, or the idea of getting old, and it goes something like this. To me, midlife is what we used to do all night now takes us all night to do. Think about it. Dante, in the beginning of his Divine Comedy, writes, "Midway in the journey of our life, I found myself in a dark wood, for the straight way was lost. Ah, how hard it is to tell what that wood was, wild, rugged, harsh. The very thought of it renews the fear. It is so bitter that death is hardly more so. But to treat of the good that I found in it, I will tell of the other things I saw there." And when Dante, at the age of 37, was banished from Florence around the year 1300, he went through a dark, difficult period himself until he was able to emerge prolific and creative again in his mid-40s. And this opening passage from what is considered his greatest work is often quoted as expressing something about the midlife crisis. And I'm not quite sure if during our hour together if we're going to be talking just on midlife crisis or we're going to be talking about midlife. We'll see how it goes. But please, at any time, jump in with your own story, with your own perspective of anything that's shared this afternoon. It is quite evident by the amount of TV programs, articles, books, films, plays, that this time of life, this struggle, has become a central theme. There is a growing volume of literature, some based on personal experience and some on research, studies on others' behavior that is emerging. And one of the processes and the very first problem we have to deal with in discussing this is come up with what are the parameters of midlife. And as we explained to a few of the people prior to the hour, no one knows, and all the literature there isn't two people who basically agree on it. For instance, one psychologist by the name of Richard Kirchhoff finds that although the United States Census Bureau, even the government gets involved here, defines middle age as lasting from 45 to 64, his research finds that it can extend from the age of 30 to 70. Now think for a minute. For those that sat in on my class about adolescence yesterday, I was saying that the psychologists and sociologists want to expand the parameters of the adolescence up to age 27. Now, if we expand midlife crisis down to 30, that gives us 3 years of wonderful life. and that sort of gets kind of confusing and scary there.
The same person doesn't have that same.
No. Oh, no. It gets worse. The Social Science Research Department of the United States government classifies midlife as being anywhere from age 40 to 60. The IRS does not really care about midlife, just as long as you keep paying your taxes as time goes on. Now, several of the leading authors and books out, and we're going to be talking about this, there's a difference between stage theory and a difference between transitional theory. Okay, the book such as A Season of a Man's Life by Levinson is based on stage theory. Gail Shee's work and Passages is based on stage theory. And of course, wherever you have one basic theory that is prominent for more than a day and a half, you're going to have other people coming out with a position kind of opposite of that. And we're going to be talking about that as we go on. Bernice Newgarten out of Northwest University says that the entire period of midlife age is one of heightened sensitivity to one's position within a complex environment, with reassessment of the self as the prevailing theme. Newgartner is one of those that takes a position that you can't put an age to the time of midlife. Another one is Elliot Jochs. These are wonderful names, isn't it? He's a British psychologist, and he sees the midlife transition as evident in every form, or in some form in everyone. And he sees it in three different forms, which I find quite interesting. He says that, you know, when you hit the crisis, when either the creative career may simply come to an end, either through the drying up of your creativity or an actual death, or it may begin to show and express itself for the first time. In other words, there's a latent young adulthood, and then all of a sudden you hit midlife, and then you become creative, and there seems to be a sense that does happen historically, and no one comes to my mind, but maybe to your mind. Historically, there have been people who have not produced, quote-unquote, produced much until they hit their 40s or their 50s and 60s, and then all of a sudden begin their creativity. Okay. And then his third one is that a decisive change in the quality or content of the creativeness may take place. So those are his three. But he goes on to say that the key lies in the arrival at the midpoint of life as the individual stops growing up and begins to grow old. That's where that bottom quote comes from. When family and occupations established and children on the threshold of adulthood, a person enters the prime of life and paradoxically finds that beyond life lies the shadow of death. And this is the key for Elliot Jacques' position, namely that he maintains that the intrusion of the reality and the inevitability of one's own eventual personal death upon their psychological scene is the central and crucial feature of the midlife phase. His position is when a person begins to think of their own personal death, not so much as death, what happens to someone else, but really begins to think about their own personal death or end of life, then they are in midlife, and then they are in their midlife crisis, according to him. Okay. Now, I want to share a couple studies with you on what people have found happen. And I think most of us know something of what goes on during midlife, if we've been through it, or if we're in it, or if we've read or listened to something about midlife. First off, like as I was mentioning before, most of the studies that have been done are mostly done on men. Most of the big works and the books that have generated from them are based on study of men, and I'm not quite sure why, though that is changing. Okay, one study was done by Joel Davitz, who interviewed a number of men in their early 40s, and he found that the average man may feel a twinge of apprehension as his 40th birthday approaches, but is confident that the sad stories told about this period doesn't apply to him. He may hesitate briefly, but soon continues his energetic climb upward and even renewed energy and ambition. He goes on to say, gradually and almost imperceptibly, however, the seams begin to weaken. The man becomes more sensitive to body aches and pains, grows tired faster, and seems to take longer to recover from illnesses. Music doesn't have its usual rich appeal to his sensitive ear, and he learns that his iron stomach and regular bowel movements no longer can be depended on. His hair begins to gray and grow thin, or fall out probably, and he becomes angry when faced with evidence of weight gain. He may start to have problems in the world of work, and the rise to the top no longer seems inevitable or even possible. He finds himself thinking that he might not even get to write that brilliant novel, paint that truly great picture, make $1 million. In small and subtle ways, he passes from the status of the young man on the way up to that of the senior man holding his own. He becomes more realistic, down to earth and practical, and more responsible. He begins to work longer hours and becomes concerned about setbacks that once seemed trivial. Perhaps for the first time, he finds it difficult to meet his and his wife's sexual expectations. Faced with the shifting standards of his adolescent children, he begins to brood about his role as a husband and father and to question his own and his wife's moral code. Since he cannot readily blow up at work or with his friends, he finds it safer to explode at home, complaining bitterly about stifling routines and responsibilities imposed upon him by his wife and children. Sounds kind of, what, bad?
Grim.
Grim, thank you. Yes, sounds very grim. Sounds very grim. Now, that's the grim side. His wife did a study of women, one of the few. Interview of women, if I can find it. There it is. And this was done by Lois Davitz, D-A-V-I-T-Z. And she found that the 39-year-old woman who turns 40 with mixed emotions, feeling confident of her experience and competence to meet everyday problems, yet vaguely apprehensive and tense because of the birthday's extensive connotations of the social psychological leap into middle age. She has been taught that society has age role expectations of her. Now that she has passed her youthful days, she must become settled, mature, and wiser, yet also duller, less buoyant, less flexible, and less attractive to others. Physically, her body gains weight, or at least changes its fat distribution to concentrate around her waist and hips. She has to focus grimly on dieting and exercise to maintain her figure and bodily vigor, to pluck out the first gray hairs, and to search for clothes that do something for her. She becomes vulnerable to her husband's sexual rejection of her, even as she tries to understand the developmental crisis he is going through. At work, she starts to be treated with respect rather than as a comrade by her youthful male colleagues, some of whom are being promoted over her head despite her competence. As she proceeds up the ladder, promotions grow harder to attain, with a step into upper echelon management, the steepest step of all. If she has not married, her single status is emphasized by her married friends who tend to cut her out of their social life. She feels alone at times and worries about the loneliness ahead of her once her parents die and she grows older. If married and children, with the children growing up, the 40-year-old married woman may decide to enter or return to college or the work world, or to become active in community affairs and volunteer activities. She may engage in an extramarital affair, often in response to her husband's lack of interest and a need to reaffirm her own sense of desirability. On the whole, she tends to ward off the sense of acute crisis that her husband is suffering. She goes on and says, or she goes on to find, that the stresses encountered at this stage often lead to a period of significant psychological growth in a woman because the woman responds actively and thus develops new interests and skills and enhances her sense of self-worth and zest for the living, strengths that she will need to meet the crisis ahead. So basically, what I find interesting with this as compared to the male counterpart, while the male many times has more difficult time, it seems that the woman does not have quite the difficulty that some of the male counterparts go through. Any response to that from anybody, male and or female?
I turned 40 this year. That's pretty close.
That's pretty close?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody found that to be true, knowing someone else, that it happened at an earlier lifetime or at a later? I never, you know, I always leave the option on open that you can talk about somebody else. That way it leaves the stress of people saying, oh, that really happened to you? And you say, well, I know a person who... It's always wonderful. So, hand up over here.
I don't, except for sort of thinking of midlife crisis, men go through that, you know, sometimes you hear these stories about them leaving their wives or something that be a really strange thing. I think that's sort of all I knew about midlife. Mm-hmm. And I'm 44. Mm-hmm. And I think that the last four, you know, plus or minus years, I have been going through it's been a very traumatic, very serious time for me.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten up and jumped and left my family and done things like that. Maybe women often, some women will do that. I mean, I'm not sure it's an easier for women than for men.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've, maybe it was recognized more, and maybe men had a neater pattern set up before. Women had to deal with dichotomy, you know, with the different sides of issues and things more, so that maybe in that sense it hasn't been as much as big a change, but it certainly, it you know, really, whatever I've been going through, the depression, the, I hate the word, but the burnout, the confusion, and hopelessness sorts of feelings, and a lot of things, the energylessness, and it went along with a whole lot of things that were new in my life that were happening, and at first thought it was just kind of all that. And then I began to hear some other things. One interesting thing was a theory that for women at this stage, also interesting the aspect of hormonal changes that are happening, and how that enters in and adds to it. And it's been very helpful to me, as I really couldn't begin to look at it, I sort of began to come out of it a bit, I think. But putting the pieces together, this is part of what's been going on with me, has made me feel like, well, I really wasn't so crazy. This idea of having to reevaluate things I thought that I had dealt with years ago, which is so typical, certainly was something that I was doing. And feeling like, you know, somehow my distance from God, somehow just some upheavals and all that sort of thing, which is typical. And, I mean, certainly, I think it's been very good to me to realize this is probably something a lot of people go through, and I feel like, well, I guess I'm just not crazy, or I'm not alone in this, I'm not, because I really wasn't in such bad shape, and I feel like I must have been terrible, maybe I've been looking at my life, you know, I just couldn't figure the whole thing out, and realize that, you know, it felt good, it's been part of the healing process, and able to go on to whatever's next, and so on, to realize that it's not uncommon. And that there's some real good things that can come out of it, which when parts of it I couldn't see that at all. And you'll probably mention some books, but if I could mention one that I've been, it's called Chaos or Creation, Spirituality in Midlife.
Yeah.
This is by Patrick Carroll and Catherine Dyckman, and they're both Roman Catholics in the Seattle Archdiocese, and very highly thought of in areas, and I just haven't run across this in our church library, because it deals with the spirituality of the process, what's happening, and brings in lots of background of the literature.
Their book, their other book is the book that's being read by the community of the holding staff people. It's their summer study book, Inviting the Mystic, or whatever the title is.
Yeah.
Imitating the Prophet, Inviting Mystic, something like that, and that's up there in the book. So they're good people. I've gone to workshops with them before. Anybody else can, you know, identify with what she was saying, male or female? Yes.
Well, I think I'm the same age you are, and I think probably I've been going through whatever you want to call it, midlife crisis changes. And I think my husband's a few years older than me, and the differences that I can see for the male, it seems like they feel that they're caught up in an economic trap. at about that age, because they've reached an age where they want to simplify, and the kids are at an age where it's impossible. They're generally either adolescents or college bound. Mm-hmm. So you're caught at a time of life when you want to make some drastic changes. And I think for the woman, if you've been a homemaker all your life and want to go into the workforce, it's very difficult to make that transition because of the sense of responsibility mm-hmm. of doing this right and the work right. And that's a dichotomy. I don't think that women, even if they've worked all their lives, ever really come to grips with without a lot of guilt. And I think that's where most women have their hard time. Mm-hmm. And so you're both kind of trapped, but for different reasons. And whether you can work it out, and I think it takes very, very unique individuals to come to grips with the two types of problems simultaneously and solve them both. Whether it's possible or not, it still remains to be seen.
There is a definite what makes this, there's plenty of cartoons and jokes out about midlife, which I think is fine, but I think there's some serious aspects to it too, because there tends to be a very high rate of divorce during this time, and also a high rate of suicide, especially amongst men, from about the age of 37 on up to about 50. Okay, and that makes the serious aspect of it too. And there are differences definitely between how the women respond and how the men respond, and part of that is part of what we need to find out. Men have to find out how the women respond, what they're going through, but they also have to identify what they are going through. And part of my work in my clientele has been basically with the male aspect. The males have a hard time either identifying or we don't want to identify it because of the changes. And part of that is caught up in the aspect of we are caught in that economical whirlwind. And it's part of not getting to the point where you either have your doctorate degree or you wrote the novel or you're president of your corporation at the age of 40, which was one of your goals, and you find that you're not going to make it. And maybe if you're at the year of 45 or 50, you're finding that you're not even going even higher. And if anything, you may be going lower in that corporation. You're going to be asked to take pay cuts and go down lower as somebody else passes you along the time. And it's a traumatic experience. Any response? Yes, sir.
I was going to mention that what you said, most of this, with the male studies, I think, have been vocational in nature, haven't they, as far as plateauing of careers?
Somewhat. Not totally. Yeah.
I just went through some stuff. The organization I work with is organizing career path studies and things, because so many of us are in the same age group. We all came up at the same time. The people that were our superiors when we got out of school and started our careers are now retired, and we're all on the same level, and the opportunities for advancement and stuff are becoming fewer and fewer, and everybody's looking around saying, well, what am I going to do now, kind of thing. It kind of spills over the other aspects of life. A little easier, I think, for the male because of that vocation thing. Now, the women are getting one because it's many of us with two career families, and it's the same idea.
There are a couple things. How many people are familiar with the book A Season in a Man's Life by Levinson? It's in the bookstore. I highly recommend it. Especially the males should read it, and the females, after they read it, should read it so they can know what they read. Let me briefly give you a description of his book, and also Gail Shee's book on Passages. Anybody familiar with that? Who have read Passages? All right, another book that I think's a must. And I mentioned this earlier in the week. Gail Shee borrowed the material from Dan Levinson and wrote her book, whereupon he sued her and came back and wrote his own book. But that's not our concern. But both of them are the leading proponent. It was Gail Shee who brought to the household or developed the household term of midlife crisis. And this is a 1976 book. Okay, and the whole idea is stage theory. In other words, we go through various transitional or stages in our lives, and we can predict those stages. And Livingston is a psychologist out of Yale, and he studied When he was 49 years old, he began a study in 1969, mostly because of his midlife strains, he felt. And he and his Yale colleagues intensively interviewed 40 men between the ages of 35 to 45 from four occupational groups. And using these interviews, they bolstered by biographies of great men and the development of other characters in literature, they described how men develop from 17 to 65. And they have it all, there's a chart in there. And it's interesting. They found that men pass through predictable, unstable transitional periods, including a particularly wrenching time very close to age 40. At each transition, a man must confront the issues that may involve his career, his marriage, his family, and the realization of his dreams if he is to progress successfully to the next period. 70% to 80% of the men that they interviewed found the midlife transition, which they label as ages 40 to 45, as tumultuous and psychologically painful, as most aspects of their lives came into question. Other people have followed up with that, including Roger Gold, who found basically the same thing in his study, and he's out of UCLA, and another one by the name of, what's his first name, George Valiant, out of Michigan State. Basically the same type of transitional, but now that is being challenged. The stage theory aspect is being challenged, and the and all of what they have found is being debated, and Levinson, he's still holding to his guns and saying everybody passes through these stages, but other people in their studies are finding that, well, it doesn't happen quite that cleanly. And even Gold has since changed his tune because he has now actually watched people in his clinical observation, and he disagrees that people go through formal developmental stages in adulthood, which leads to some of the other proponents. Let me share some of this. Okay, Nancy Schlossberg, a counselor educator at the University of Maryland, disagrees that there is a single universal timetable for adult development, both male or female, or that one can predict the crisis in people's lives by knowing their age. This is, I like this quote, and I'm not quite sure why, but I really like it. She says, "Give me a room full of 40-year-old women, and you have told me nothing." give me a case story about what each has experienced, and then I can tell if one is going to have a crisis and another a tranquil period. What matters is what transition she has experienced. Has she been dumped by a husband, fired from her job, had a breast removed, gone back to school, remarried, had her first book published? It is what has happened or not happened to her, not how old she is, that counts. There are as many patterns as there are people.
Excellent.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little different. It's a little off. A little off. It's different from the stage theory that at a certain age this kind of happens. And looking over the crowd here, I see a big spectrum of age.
What's her name again?
Her name is Nancy Schlossberg, S-C-H-L-O-S-S-B-E-R-G. The difficulty with a lot of these studies, these people have not gotten around to writing their books about it that are going to show up on the bookshelves and make them a lot of money. Okay. Another point that is brought out by a person by the name of Alice Rossi, and it's interesting, so far two females are going up against the male stage theory are now going up, are taking a different view. And she points out that the findings from these other three gentlemen may not apply to any other group outside of their group. She points out that most of the people studied by Levinson and Valiant and Gould were born before and during the Depression and were predominantly male, white, and upper middle class. What was true for these people may not hold for today's 40-year-olds born in the optimistic aftermath of World War II
short.
Or the post-baby generation just approaching.
So let me try to do it just with...
And that brings to the biggest conflict on the stage aspect is it doesn't...
The idea of...
Many people are starting to point out that the stage theory does not appear to apply to women. And basically it goes something like this from... And this is from a man, Albert Bandura of Stanford University. He says that while the events may be... I missed it. excuse me, it wasn't him. It's Rosalind Barnett and Grace Baruch from Wesleyan Center for Research of Women. They say it is hard to know how to think of a woman within this stage theory. A woman may not enter the world of work until her late 30s. She seldom has a mentor. And even women with lifelong career commitments rarely are in a position to reassess their commitment pattern by the age of 40. Thereupon, their pattern does not fit the pattern for the male stage theory.
Is there a date on that?
On what? On their...
That statement?
On that statement. This comes out of a May 1987 article.
It's a recent study.
Yeah. Most of these recent studies are within the last 3 years. But one thing that I have done is kind of pull together some of the general themes, and let's get these out. What I see is as some of the events that go on, and see if we can get some response from the you people. And I see it, and this is somewhat personal, but it's also what I have gleaned from the literature out there. But midlife, and I've got about 5 or 6 points here. The first is that midlife is a time for evaluation and reevaluation of virtually everything. Basically, starting with the goals that we have set from youth. Goals from youth. These include our dreams, our goals for relationships, and our goals for our beliefs. It is an opportunity during the evaluation time and reevaluation time to set new goals. And also another opportunity there is to decide whether to, after we've set the new goals, if we even want to go after these new goals that we've set. So there's a lot of options. So it's a time of evaluation and reevaluation of virtually everything. And this is where all of the studies seem to point, is that this does happen. There isn't one study that is saying that we never go through this. This is a predominant aspect of human development. What they don't understand yet, and I haven't found any literature on it, is why does it affect some people, you know, in an extreme manner, while other people kind of pass through it, just part of life, just kind of are able to flow through it. That is an unknown.
Schlossberg answers that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It depends upon what the person has and has not done.
Yeah, and the quality of life. Okay.
Which might answer why men have more trouble than women, because as a general rule, women tend to have spent the first part of their lives, young adult lives and later adult lives, in the raising of children and family, and more things that you realize at midlife are the most important, where men have come up economically for success in a different fashion. So when they come to that midlife realization of what life, what really means something in life, it's harder because they haven't follow the same track.
Any reaction, men? Yes.
I don't think that's true anymore. At least in my area.
A little louder, please.
I don't think that's true anymore. I think women nowadays, at least that I'm familiar with, are just as professional and as career-oriented as men. And the phenomenon that men have experienced in the past generation, I think, would be all that more apparent in women. Where their career is just as important, and the child caring duties are shared equally between the parents.
And I have a question: whether every woman in midlife, or 40, or whatever was after children have grown and gone, that every woman would look back on that and say, "Oh, that's as you sort of implied that, well, I finished that, and that was the most important thing," or something. A lot of women would just feel the opposite: that, "Well, I got done with that, now what am I going to do?" Or else may have always tried to convince herself that's the way she felt, that that was the most important thing, but suddenly realizes it wasn't as satisfying as she had, society had led her to believe.
So some question on that role that was, that they undertook.
It's something in this book that I've been reading. It says, whatever you've been doing in your young adult life, that there's an imbalance, that there's another side that isn't developed, and then when you get to this stage, you're going to be starting to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So whichever way it is, you're going to be starting to see another side, and some other aspects. And they do, one person they were talking about there did seem to think that men and women were to do different types of things, generally speaking, or different ways of looking at things, and at this point,
kind of maybe reverse sort of, but that everybody's, but their stuff that they pull up seems to agree with me too, that is that everybody's going to go through something in the seeing the world in a new way.
And I've heard it explained too that the crisis aspect, and you know, I have Clayton Barbeau, who I respect very highly, is a Catholic family therapist out of San Francisco, very popular amongst the Catholic churches. He has several film series out. He's like the James Dobson of the Catholic circle. Some wonderful books out. And he talks about midlife. He explains midlife as that for the woman as crying over the asparagus. For no reason at all, you can be in the supermarket and all of a sudden emotionally just like that. And I remembered that because I was driving on the freeway once and all of a sudden I became very inundated, just overwhelmed by a sense of fear and sadness that I started to cry and I had to pull off the freeway to get control of myself. It just whoom. So I quickly called my very good friend, who's also a therapist, and said, Barb, this is what's been happening to me. And I rattled off about 8 different things, question of life in her career, the whole bit. And Barb says, Tim, you're in your midlife crisis. And then she hung up. But she does work, she's being courted by several people and publishing companies because she does stuff on how to survive your husband's midlife crisis. And she has enough stuff and experience because she lived it with her husband that she's supposed to be writing a book on that. But anyway, that's a little off subject. But, you know, this whole getting inundated by the emotions and the feelings. Okay, I need to move on here just a little bit. The second one, at midlife, as a time for some personal work, something of what I've been hearing amongst our dialogue. It's moving from the external to the internal. It's from focusing like on work and family and friends and more taking a look on the inside. It's moving from the religious life to the spiritual life. It's decisions become more and more based on personal value rather than what is good for the group, what is good for the organization, what is good for the family. Okay. It's a question of what do I want or what is good for me. I have given so much to the family. Now I want to know what do I want. Part of this midlife I see, if you are a parent, I think there's an emerging new parenting roles. There's a relinquish of the primary role of parent and child for the role of parent and emerging adult. That's traumatic. It's negotiating of new boundaries with the emancipated and or married child or children. New boundaries being formed and negotiations around that. And this one applies both to single people and to couples or to people in a couple relationship. And that is the issue of beginning to parent your own parent. Yes?
What is moving from a religious life to spiritual?
Anybody else? I heard some, oh yes. I mean, I can answer that, but let's have some dialogue.
For me, I can only answer that for myself. But I have been very, very active in my church. I believe the doctrines of the church really without question. I have very immature faith as I look back on it. I proclaimed my faith strongly, but I really hadn't internalized it. And in the last 5 years, I can relate to what you've been talking about, because in the last 5 years, I have searched everything. I've left no stone unturned. And one of the most painful aspects of that was the reevaluating who I am spiritually, where I stand with God, who is God for me, where is He, and I don't necessarily find God in the church as much as I do in other areas where I didn't expect to find Him.
Usually what I mean by moving from the religious to the spiritual, it's based somewhat on what she was talking about. All of a sudden, for those people, I've worked in a church for 14 years, and you know, there every Sunday and going through the whole process and the importance of the church and the love for the church, and all of a sudden the question starts coming, is there more to my spiritual life than the routine, basically, of going to church? Is there more to the spiritual life? That's where it is for me. Is there more to it? But that question is raised. And for some people, it's a moving from that religious aspect to the more spiritual. It's a lot of times there's people sort of refined in, you know, the whole prayer life. Prayer becomes a lot more personal. It's done more often. It's done more seriously. The quiet time, the meditative type of time, those things kind of develop in that. So there is that possibility of that happening. A lot of people that I see in private practice have a lot of questions about that, and they're really scared about the fact that they no longer find that much satisfaction in the organized church, or they don't follow the doctrines, or they question, but they don't know how to handle that. Does that answer? Does that help?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think I see more like a graph. You know, that there isn't any particular time, but you know, it's like a scale.
Okay, that's
scale.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can be.
And it's a long stroke. You know, isn't the person James Fowler?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
a lot of
wonderful
on,
stuff.
On stages, spiritual stages.
Yeah. James Fowler or John Westerhoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I go, you know, on Monday when I went through the whole life cycle, I pointed out that and some studies are starting to show that the people that had the easiest time through their midlife are ones that see the midlife as a time for growth. And if they see life as nothing more than continuous growth personally, instead of, and I use the term that Howard Kleinbell used, that a lot of people, he feels, and he's a clinical psychologist who's ahead of the... He's at Claremont Theology School down in Southern California, and he's director of the Center for Study of Religion and Wholeness there. But he uses the phrase that we tend to die at 30, but we don't get around to being buried till we're 70. Okay? So we physically, emotionally, spiritually, we tend to just kind of end it all at 30, and then we just kind of go through life without that growth aspect.
That's when you get stuck, right?
That you get stuck. That's right. So this whole aspect of life as stages of growth, people are finding that people that see that life, you know, has that to offer are the ones that can go through the midlife a lot easier. Another one, if you are married, another task, opportunity to return to the marriage after you've launched the children off, but there seems to be a big evaluation going on. Do I want to stay in the marriage? Some of the positive sides, or some of the different sides, I don't want to say positive, but some of the different sides is finding new ways of gratification from the spouse, or from friends, or from extended family, or from interest groups. It's the old idea that after you've raised and gone through the whole issue with the children, and then that one morning you look across the table and you wonder who that stranger is. You know, because that stranger or that person, your spouse, has been seen in a different light through all these years, and now the two are alone again. So there's that evaluation and actually some renegotiation. It also could be a time for career issues or refocus on a career. So a lot of people use the opportunity to leave a career. Others put new invigorated energy into their career. You know, they go through and say, hey, this is all right. They come to after they complain about it over a period of time, they go back to the career. Some other reactions, some of the negative reactions that happen during midlife. There, as I mentioned before, there's an increase in suicide. There's an increase in alcoholism. There's quitting of job, which can add stress to the whole family system or the individual couple system. There's a lot of sexual promiscuity. But there's also some positive sides of the personality, capabilities or interests that may have been set aside to pursue other goals are now recovered or uncovered. And in men, especially in men, there's an opportunity to move toward the expression of feelings to become more nurturing, to develop greater interest in relationships, and less emphasis on achievement and performance. And it was during a lot of times in midlife where several men will quit that corporate job or that big business job or that school job and look for something to where they can utilize their gift of nurturing, okay? Some type of service process. I find it fascinating that the average age for men and women entering seminary is now, you know, has been going up steadily over the last few years. And I think the average age is just under 30 years of age, which means that they're going out and they're trying other professions, and then they feel that they want to do something different, more in the service occupation, more of service to God, or whatever reason, and they go back to the seminary. When I was at seminary way back in the 70s, there was a gentleman there who, if I remember correctly, was in his early 50s, who did just that. And he was studying to be a pastor, you know. The overall, and this is probably the bottom line of the whole midlife, from all the studies and all the books that I've been able to get my hands on, is the whole aspect of grieving. And I think it's, and I think everybody goes through this in some aspect, maybe not all in one day, but it's spread over at a period of time. And Clayton Barbeau, again, sees the whole idea of depression and grieving as a wonderful opportunity for growth. Okay, so it's not all, just because you're grieving, is not to be seen just as being something very negative, but it's also the opportunity. Because wherever there is depression, there's always hope. Where there's grieving, there's always nurturing, there's always hope. But grieving over some of these items here, not items, some of these situations, and they come in any order. If you have children, there's going to be a grief over the loss of children. The loss of children to school, because several people who go through midlife still have children that are either still children, or they're adolescent, or they're entering college. Okay, so over the loss of children to school, over the loss of children to their own marriages, over loss of children to moving away, or over the loss of children to death. Another grieving happens over the loss of physical attraction. Okay, it's the time where, well, it hasn't happened to me because I just buy larger shirts, that's all, but where where the male will stand in front of the mirror and find out it's not worth the effort anymore to suck in the gut. You just can't do it. You can't hold your breath that long anymore. You know, something on that line where for myself, when I get out of the shower and the light is around the mirror and I get this glow off the top of my head, you know, it doesn't look bad now, but when you wash it and it gets all flattened out, then you get this shiny dome, you know, on the top. So it's the physical attraction. It's over the loss of sexuality. There's grieving over the loss of work, or the goals of work, which I kind of mentioned before. There's grieving over the loss of friends, either through your friends dying or moving away, or a disinterest in a certain friend or friends or group of friends. It's also grieving over loss of status in the community. And there's a loss of parents, grieving over the loss of your own parent or parents. And there's grieving over the loss of a spouse, either through death or through divorce. So that aspect of grieving, all the, you know, that's the bottom line. That's going to be there. It's going to be there for everybody. But there's also, with that grieving, there's that sense of hope, because with the loss of some friends, there's also the possibility of new friends. The loss of one aspect of career or work, there's also the hope of another career or work. You're going to be searching again. The average time now that people stay in one job has dropped to 3.6 years. That's the national average. People change, will have a major career change four to five times in their life. No longer do people come out of college, if they go to college or vo-tech school or whatever they do, and enter into a corporation with the idea that they're going to stay there all their life. It doesn't work. And if you think about it, just think about it once, and I did this, and I came up with 27 different, quote, careers that I've had. talking about it, let me explain what that is. Those are jobs that I actually got paid for. And when did that start? For me, it started in fourth grade by selling newspapers on the corner stand. So I've listed all the different careers that I've had, and I've come up with 27 so far. And that's exciting, which means that I've changed careers about one year, because whatever, I'm not good at math, but I'm 39 and I've had 27 different careers, so that's whatever. Anyway, any response to that? Midlife. One of the things that I did mention at the beginning, what we would have been fun, and we do have a few minutes, we could come up with our, with a Holden Village definition of what midlife is. Wouldn't it be great to have it in, you know, inscribed someplace? Midlife, what is it? What is it? Anybody?
I think it's a time you come face to face with yourself.
Okay, time that you come face to face with yourself. The good, the bad, and the ugly, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What else? Can you survive it?
A lot of people have.
Yeah, I should hope so. How? What are some processes that would enable people to get through that midlife time? Anybody? What are some things that could happen?
We found that, and this is something we've done over a period of years, my wife and I have sat down once a year and ask ourselves in
some of the poor families. Yeah. Francois Mitterrand from France, he is saying,
what did we want to do? What did we get accomplished? Do we still want to do anything? And we've been doing that over a period of time, and I think if you do that, intending to maybe deal with some change on an ongoing basis, then it's not such a big change.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So setting of short-term and long-term type of goals.
Yeah, well, these are all long-term.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
New interests in recreation, things mm-hmm. that you like to do, mm-hmm. together or separately.
The dead.
Mm-hmm. And continuation of education. Not letting the wheels get rusty. Mm-hmm.
See life as a growth process. Through, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that definition.
Oh, I don't like any of those, but that's all right.
Especially getting to go old, because somehow I guess my reaction to old is death. And yes, in one sense, you're recognizing the fact that you are mortal.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't sound hopeful. And I think, I guess what I'm seeing is that you're at a place where you see life in a new way. You make some sense out of you accept and learn to live with the things that are the good and the bad, and the ups and downs and all that. And no longer have to have all the answers, but you can be at peace with that and go into these new things. And a new kind of peace can be with you that you haven't ever had.
There are two thoughts on that.
Oh, the interest. So no money is really involved anymore. Anyhow,
and with changes in lifestyle,
I would say
there are over 30, and as I said, I believe yesterday or Monday in my other class, there are over 30,000 Americans that are now of the age of 100.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the number is increasing every day. Mm-hmm. Over 30,000 of them, 100 years of age and older. Mm-hmm. I think it's wonderful. I can't wait.
I don't think one is ever old as long as they are willing to learn new things mm-hmm. and they keep their interests mm-hmm. alive, mm-hmm. looking for other things.
It used to be, at turn of the century, or not even that far back, that at the turn of the century and back in the 1800s, I guess, the life expectancy was around 40 years, and everybody worked 70 hours a week. Now that's kind of flip-flop. People work 40 hours a week, and life expectancy is around 70, and actually it's gone up.
One reason, I've wondered why, how come, if this is something that's so typical in people's lives, why don't we have just sort of a background of religious, societal, cultural, whatever, understanding of this, why is it all this new? And maybe part of the reason why it's also new is the fact that we live so much longer than we did.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously mm-hmm. it's been there for, you know, Job and all, you know, it's been there. But.
And one could also argue that I think what the American dream, whatever that is, and however that's defined, and that would probably take 2 hours to define that, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are finding that American dream, one, I cannot get to that, however society or culture defines it to be, and second, I'm not sure if it's even worth to attempt it. There has to be something better than that.
But part of it's a spiritual thing. It has to do with the American dream. It has to do with new awarenesses of God in your life.
Well, I think it's very spiritual. I think the overlapping thing of midlife crisis, it's a spiritual question. That's how I approach it when I do counseling with people. Yes?
Comment on your statements that previous generations, the satisfaction of work itself was gratifying to many people. Mm-hmm. The priorities and what's important to the person, it's not enough just to work now. Just progress. Mm-hmm. When you cease to progress, comes a crisis in a person's life. It's not enough just to do work and accomplish a task. If it isn't a challenging task, and you get some other.
Hey, there's the ones that are behind you.
Enough anymore. Whereas my grandfather, it was enough to go and work at the mill for 8 hours a day.
Important to
satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah. And part two, you know, the type of world that we live in is shifting so quickly, okay? And another statistic that I used yesterday or the day before was that 48% of all jobs that will be available for people within the next 5 to 10 years have not even been invented yet. Information explosion is unbelievable, you know, brought on by the computer age. You know, which is exciting, I find that very exciting.
So it also means you've got a whole lot more things to adjust to.
That's right.
And so it's going to create a whole lot more.
And it will create a lot more stress and struggle. And then the question is, and my underlying theme of this whole week is, what can the church do with all this, if anything? And we have 2 minutes left. What can the church do?
Well, before you ask that question...
Now I have a minute and a half. No.
But what I was going to say is an answer to that question.
Okay.
But I thought of it before. That I had a career, and I was so busy in my career that I didn't have time to do for my church what I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And then after I retired, then I could major in what I wanted to do for the church, and I found some very thrilling experiences.
I have a dream sometime where in church life there will be a sense of ritual more than what we do now, and I mentioned this earlier too. And that ritual would be, let's celebrate people's entering midlife. Let's celebrate within the congregation, within the community, the changes that they go through. Let's identify it. Instead of letting the people go through and stress it out and suffer, let's get the support groups for them. Have people get up to say, hey, I lost my job when I was 42 years old. I got fired. I had to go. I know what I can empathize with what you're going through. Let's sit down and talk about it. You know, I think the church, the individuals and the groups within the church have great strength and potential to be of aid to anybody going through this, whether it's parenting, whether it's grieving, all aspects of it. You know. And I think I would like to see the church develop some type of rituals around this whole thing, because I think in the long run, midlife is basically a blessing rather than a curse.
Yeah.